KTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. It is 10 past 8. The morning show with Greg Berg is next.
We welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today's interview comes from the Morning Show archives. One of the greatest pleasures and privileges of hosting the morning show is when I have the opportunity to reconnect with marvelous writers like Fern Schumer Chapman. The first time we spoke on the morning show was to talk about her remarkable and beautiful memoir titled Motherland, Beyond the Holocaust, A Mother-Daughter Journey to Reclaim the Past. In the book, Fern Schumer Chapman seeks to understand her own mother's experience as a Holocaust survivor, and the book chronicles their remarkable journey back to Germany. We also spoke about her book, Like Finding My Twin, How an Eighth Grade Class Reunited Two Holocaust Refugees, which tells the astonishing story of how Fern Schumer Chapman's mother was reconnected with her closest childhood friend, also a Holocaust survivor. Most recently, I spoke with Fern Schumer Chapman about a beautiful children's book she wrote titled Happy Harper Thursdays, A Grandmother's Love for Her Granddaughter During the Coronavirus, which was inspired by Fern Schumer Chapman's deep pain, a pain shared by grandparents all across the country and around the world, finding themselves separated from a grandchild because of the pandemic. And recently, Fern Schumer Chapman has released a sequel to that book called The Return of Happy Harper Thursdays, The Guiding Light of a Grandmother's Love. Fern Schumer Chapman's most recent book is titled Brothers, Sisters, Strangers, Sibling Estrangement and the Road to Reconciliation. Sibling estrangement is something that is actually quite common, but it is also something to which is attached a very particular kind of pain and stigma. When people are estranged from their siblings, they are typically deeply ashamed of that estrangement or find it very awkward and difficult to talk about it with anybody. Fern Schumer Chapman herself experienced deep, painful estrangement from her own brother, Scott, for nearly 40 years. This book is about that estrangement and their ultimate reconciliation. But this book is about a lot more than that. Fern Schumer Chapman was able to speak to a number of people who have experienced this in their own lives. And she also drew upon the expertise of people who have studied this phenomenon. And the book includes exploration of what some of the risk factors are and some of the ways in which reconciliation can perhaps be achieved. The book again is titled Brothers, Sisters, Strangers, Sibling Estrangement and the Road to Reconciliation, published by Viking.
I want to say right off the bat that I found this book deeply moving and just endlessly fascinating. And I want to say that as somebody who is not estranged from siblings. I have three siblings. I love them all. They love me. And although we've certainly had rocky patches. I don't think I would ever characterize any of those rocky patches as serious as being an estrangement. So I only say that to say that I love this book. I am so glad I read this book, even though, in a sense, it's not my own story. Maybe part of the reason is that just by reading this book, it helps us understand kind of the peculiar dynamics of siblings, whether siblings are extremely close or deeply estranged or some maybe uneasy mix of the two. I wonder if you've spoken to anybody else who feels a connection to this book, even if it isn't their own particular story.
I have, and I think that people are pulled into the story because, of course, the book opens with my mother calling and leaving a voicemail. She's desperate for me to get involved once again with my brother, with whom I've had no relationship for decades. And the reason is that he was in a very dark place and she didn't know what to do anymore to help him. And so she wanted me to then intervene. Of course, this raises all sorts of issues of what are my obligations as a sister to a brother who hasn't been a brother? What are my obligations to my mother? And I think from there, and Greg, you picked it up exactly the way I intended it, and that is that it is a discussion of sibling relationships, not just estrangement, but sort of an attempt to quantify why relationships matter. And they are the longest relationship that we have in our lives. They are longer than, of course, parent-child relationships, longer than partner relationships. And the new research on all of it indicates how they matter. And I can go into that at length.
I know, remember one of the things you tell us, and I think this is so true, is that a sibling reintroduces us to our former selves. They are woven into the fabric of our lives. So, and of course, this can play out in a lot of ways. In my own situation, my wife will tell you that when I'm with my siblings, you know, I'm suddenly 16 years old again, in the sense of, you know, just sitting on the couch and not remembering to help out and whatever. It's just like we revert into childhood roles, at least to some extent. But even beyond that, they have a connection to us that, for instance, the typical coworker or typical friend does not. And by being woven into our past, they're also, in many cases, woven into a very complicated past. And that's, of course, the story of your family.
Right. I mean, who else are you in the bathtub with at three? Your siblings. So there's a shared history there that nobody else experiences with you. And one of the things that bothered me terribly during the estrangement was there was nobody, because I only have one brother, there was nobody to corroborate my perception. So, of course, every individual in a family has different perspectives on what happened and how it happened. But nonetheless, you gain insight when you talk about it. And I was left alone with these memories. And they were rather disturbing memories, and nobody, including my brother, to share it with. And that was very alienating and isolating.
Right. We should probably get to the heart of the source of your estrangement, which really was not any big blow-up fight. You kind of tell us that it was just something that kind of happened over time, but really, the catalyst, if there was any catalyst, was your brother's very difficult relationship with your father.
And well, I think there are a couple of important points to make about this. First of all, Greg, I didn't know the reason. So that left me with decades to wonder, why doesn't he talk to me? What have I done? How can I fix this? And I found, and this is very true for many of the estranged, that they ruminate and they can't get that loop thinking out of their brain. They just keep thinking about, especially if they don't know the reason. And that was almost like mourning the living, because there was no, you know, with a death, at least it's final. But when somebody is alive but wants nothing to do with you, you never close the door on hope.
You at one point say, I was stuck on a Mobius strip of rumination. I mean, ruminating about why are we estranged? What did I do? What did I say? And not knowing the answers. And of course, the person who could answer those questions potentially is the person with whom you're estranged and not available to offer those answers. So yeah, I guess it's important for us to say at the outset that through the course of this estrangement, you didn't know what was going on. Maybe you could tell us now in retrospect what you understand about
how
this rupture began.
Well, the first thing I understand about all this is that the reasons I suspected were all wrong. I always blamed myself. I always thought I had done something to precipitate all this. And of course, I had no voice because he wasn't talking to me. So I couldn't go to him, as you point out, and say, what did I do and why are you angry? And I'm not sure he was at a place where he could reflect on what had happened and why it had happened. And as you know, the book brings the reader along on this journey of trying to rebuild the relationship after all this betrayal and mistrust. And that was a very difficult part of this experience. But to answer your earlier question as to why this actually happened, yes, there was a deep divide in the family. I had aligned myself to some extent in terms of values and lifestyle with my very accomplished father. And my brother had rejected my father's lifestyle and values. And I don't think my brother could separate me from my dad. And he was angry at my father. And he had had an estrangement with him. And I was able to sustain a relationship with this very difficult man. And my brother resented me to some extent for that. And he was jealous of the fact that my children were able to have some relationship with their grandfather, whereas my brother couldn't sustain the relationship and his children had no contact with my father as well, their grandfather.
One of the things you tell us is that because of a sort of emotional void in your home growing up, mm-hmm. in terms of, I think, with both your mother and father, but mm-hmm. I know more about mm-hmm. the way in which your mother was maybe incapable of offering kind of the affection that one might hope to get from one's mother, that was one reason why you pinned so much on your relationship with your older brother, and that is an important reason why this estrangement was especially painful for you.
Right. I only had one brother, and then I wasn't getting the necessary love to develop properly as a child because the family was very dysfunctional, partly because of the Holocaust. And as a result, I turned to the only person who was older than me and seemed to me know how to navigate things better than I did. And I had an expectation from him, which was very unrealistic. And that was that he would somehow guide me a little bit in a world I wasn't getting much parental guidance from. So, you know, one of the interesting things about all of this, Greg, is when I started the book, I had no idea that there were actually risk factors for why these things happen. So you just identified one of them. When there's family trauma, there's often the risk of estrangement. And of course, William and Harry are a very good example of this. They have been on the world stage with their sibling estrangement. And the brothers experienced the death of their mother, which was a deeply traumatizing event at a very young age. So that's one risk factor. Now there are several others. For example, and I mention again William and Harry because they're an excellent example of some of the problems. The monarchy, of course, is the ultimate in parental favoritism. And parental favoritism is a risk factor. William's going to become king and Harry will always be relegated to a supporting role. So that's a second one. Poor communication skills in the family. My parents did not model good skills for how to navigate differences. Well, same thing with the monarchy. And the brothers, of course, have never learned to negotiate their differences. And finally, a fourth one is family values, judgments, and choices. And Harry has married far outside the family identity. Some families simply don't tolerate somebody who chooses a partner who resists or defies that family identity. And of course, he may have done this wittingly or unwittingly, but certainly his choice of a partner has created distance, if not a total break in the family. So those are just four risk factors. There are many others, but I mention those at this point because obviously I also had some setup for this as well.
Right. One other thing about your father, I don't remember if in what you described, if this has come up yet, but it sounds like your father engaged in a great deal of deliberate acts of estrangement from various people with whom he would feel disgruntled for one reason or another. I think at one point in your book, you call it family editing. And at another point, you use, I don't know if this is a simile or
now.
Not at the time, I'm sure. And shortly after that, you use, I don't know if this is a simile or a metaphor or what it is, but you say of your father, in all his relationships, he kept one hand firmly on the spigot of his affection. So in other words, this was his normal way of interacting with, I'm guessing, maybe family and friends and coworkers and whoever in his life might at certain points displease him. And one has to wonder if your brother saw this tool that your father readily used time and time again and took it for himself.
Absolutely, and that's another risk factor. If there are estrangements in the family, it is modeled, and therefore, you know, he says in the book at one point, my brother says, I did to you what Dad did to me. It was modeled.
Wow. And of course, we've already touched on how desperate you were to maintain ties with both your mother and your father, and how especially maintaining a relationship with your father was exceedingly difficult. You liken it one time, like trying to ride an untamed, unwilling stallion. That tells us a lot about a rough ride, which was the relationship that you had with your father. But at least you were trying to maintain some kind of relationship, and this evidently was an ingredient in why your own brother began to feel such distance from you.
You know, my father was an extraordinarily accomplished scientist and doctor. And he had some grandiose dreams of maybe one day even winning the Nobel. I mean, that's how big he thought and hoped to be. He was a very difficult, arrogant person, and maintaining a relationship with him was never guaranteed and very conditional. And the problem with that kind of relationship is you give up a lot of yourself to stay in it. My brother made the choice to cut off. And as I say in the book, as much as I wanted that relationship with my father, there were days when I envied his choice. It seemed in some ways simpler because I was constantly exposed to his rejections as well as his attention, which was wonderful, but it was never consistent.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Bern Schumer Chapman. This is our fourth morning show conversation. We're talking today about her most recent book, which is called Brothers, Sisters, Strangers, Sibling Estrangement and the Road to Reconciliation. I want to just backtrack for a moment. We've dug pretty deeply into your own personal story of this deep estrangement with your own brother for decades. I want to make sure that people understand that your book is not only a memoir of your relationship, but also a larger, wider examination of this phenomenon of sibling estrangement, which can occur for a for an array of different reasons. And you not only have researched the topic, although it has not been studied extensively, but you also set about doing some of your own research in a couple of different ways. Mm-hmm. One of them was by creating a survey, and you reached out to people who had this reality in their lives, and you eventually heard from some people. But before we talk about what you learned from the survey, I think it's important for us to talk about the intense stigma that is attached to this. The fact that, I think at one point you say in the book, if somebody says, oh, I'm not very close to my mother, or I'm not very close to my father, or I've drifted apart from my best friend, people hardly bat an eye. But when somebody admits to no longer speaking to their own brother or their own sister, there is a certain kind of shame attached to that that we do not feel about other relationships and other kinds of estrangement. Tell us more about that and what you think is behind the depth and intensity of this stigma.
Well, it's a very humiliating and embarrassing experience when somebody comes over to you and says, how's your brother? And of course, you're not speaking to him. And you don't know how to answer. And I think I illustrated this in the book and said that I'm very quick to turn the conversation around and say, oh, fine, how are you? And how's your sister? It's just a source of great pain. And every time someone asks you about that sibling, it's another jolt. Why is it so stigmatized? There are assumptions about the family that it will be coherent and connected. And we are very reluctant to accept any other model.
And that is one of the things that, of course, makes this difficult to explore and made it very, very difficult in terms of you being willing to reach back out to your brother. I mean, this estrangement was so painful, but the thought of attempting it and having the reconciliation fail is just as painful and would be in some ways just a new source of more shame. And you tell us that some of what you explored tells us that in many cases, attempts at reconciliation often fail. That's not an uncommon phenomenon at all. And of course, in many cases, no attempt is ever even made.
Well, in the book, in the memoir portion of the book, I spend a lot of time worrying that we are going to lapse back into estrangement. And of course, I'm dealing with a stranger. I'm really negotiating with a stranger. I don't know my brother anymore. And suddenly I am thrown in with him to try to help him out of this dark place. And I don't even know what he does or how he conducts his life. And as you know, there's this very weird and funny moment when I try to reach him to wake him up to, because we were going to go to a therapy session together, and I can't get him anywhere. And of course, I have this major panic that he's disappeared on me or he's done something terrible. And finally, I'm ringing the phone, can't get through. Finally picks up. And I said, where have you been? I've been trying to reach you. And he said, Fern, I was in the shower. Well, that's how little I know.
So this person who is both your brother and a stranger you are trying to rebuild connection with. And of course, that's a big part of this book. Let's circle back to the survey that I started to talk to you about, and the fact that because there is such deep stigma attached to sibling estrangement, a lot of people are very reluctant to talk about this, even with people they're very close to. Although you ultimately did manage to connect with more than 100 people willing to fill out this fairly extensive survey. How valuable did that end up being in terms of what you learned through the survey?
It was valuable. Let me say a couple of things. First of all, it's difficult for people to admit that they're estranged. It's even more difficult to get people to fill out a survey about estrangement because they don't want to see it on the page. And I had people who said to me, it's just too painful to revisit. And some of my readers have even said, those who are estranged have said, I think this is a really important book and I am going to get through it, but it's challenging for me because it's bringing up and stirring up a lot of issues. So the survey was not statistically significant. And obviously you're going to have to get thousands and thousands of people to make it significant. What it produced are stories. And what that did for me is it indicated patterns. And I was able to see more and more patterns in those who were estranged. And it really did reinforce a lot of the research that I was already finding out there. I do want to say that Freud only mentions sibling relationships 5 times in all of his works. And the real research on siblings has only occurred in the last 20 years or so. And yet, siblings are extraordinarily important. And one of the most interesting studies on siblings comes from the Harvard Study of Adult Development. This study has been underway since 1938, and it is the longest study of well-being out there. This study has determined that a close relationship with a sibling during college years provided the single most reliable indicator of emotional health at 65. So that means that it is a cornerstone of emotional health. It's more important to well-being than childhood closeness to parents or emotional problems in childhood, parental divorce, even marriages or career. This is the piece that matters. So I think we have completely underestimated the importance and value of siblings. And having been estranged and now reconnected, I assure you that my well-being is elevated as a result of the reconciliation. Siblings also improve self-esteem better. They improve academic performance for young people. They often improve the chances of becoming a well-adjusted adult and also less loneliness, lower levels of depression, and greater satisfaction, of course, in life.
One of the things you tell us about the relationship that we have with siblings that is maybe a complicating factor that can occasionally exacerbate the factors that can lead to estrangement is something I'd never really stopped to think about, namely that there is often a sense of competition between siblings. That's not news to anybody. But so that in many cases, you tell us, brothers and sisters often reduce competition by cultivating unique traits and differentiating themselves from each other. In other words, that's one way to feel like you matter in a family, in an array of siblings, is if you're the clown, or if you're the stud, or you're the bookworm, or you're the whatever. But you sort of stamp out your own unique place within the matrix of a family. And the thing is, one can at least sometimes inadvertently be laying the groundwork for potential estrangement if you are, in a sense, playing up how you are different from each other rather than focusing on all the ways in which you are so much alike. I thought that was a very interesting insight. Is that part of what we're looking at with you and your brother?
Yes. Well, let me first say that children are after a scarce resource. That scarce resource is parental love. And they must differentiate themselves so that they can get the parental love that they need. And I crack a joke in the book, which really is accurate. It may be funny, but it's not funny, that my brother and I were so different that we seemed to have differentiated ourselves out of a relationship completely. And he and I were very different, and we valued very different things. So it was difficult for us to find common ground because of that. And like I said earlier, there was a divide in the family. My father and I were more closely aligned, and my mother and my brother had a deeper connection. And so it seemed to just sort of create this huge abyss between the two parts.
You say at one point in that same chapter, siblings are often chronicling chronically wrestling with competition, cooperation, and comparison, the big three C's that, I mean, if they're not carefully calibrated, can really lead to trouble. You also tell us at one point in the book that the family, in quotations, of the 21st century is undergoing some radical, profound metamorphosis. And that is also something that could be at the heart of what seems to be a worsening problem, a wider and wider prevalence of sibling estrangement. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, really only a third of families live in a traditional nuclear arrangement. So with a mother and a father and the children living together. And that's a dramatic reduction from the 1950s and 60s. And as a result, the sibling relations change as well, because obviously you have one, maybe one fewer parent living in the home, and you have to go after that one parent's affection rather than two. So it changes the dynamic there as well. I think, though, related to those three C's, that those three C's are a factor, not just in childhood, but in adulthood as well. You're constantly in competition and comparing yourselves and in cooperation to with your sibling. And I know, so for example, it's interesting, in terms of estrangement, there are actually perilous moments when estrangement might occur. And I'll run through some of those really quickly. But really the reasons that these are perilous moments is because they're turning points and people in the family are having to redefine their roles. So adolescence, when somebody leaves the family, is one. Marriage, when you have to integrate a new brother or a sister-in-law into the family. The birth of a baby, which changes the focus, of course. Divorce or illness, which requires support. And of course, parental illness, death, and inheritance is a huge issue. And in my survey, so many people talked about how everything was fine until the parent got sick and one person became the caregiver, or there was a big estate and it had to be divided. And suddenly you pull the curtain back on greed or selfishness, and those things come into big play.
Yes, you write, at such moments, minor clashes may push siblings beyond their ability to cope, prompting a kind of circuit breaker on their emotions. They abandon their familial role as a quick fix to provide immediate relief. You know, it's interesting, as I read those words, it reminds me of sometimes a situation that occurs with some of the students that I teach at a local college, where when somebody is feeling kind of overwhelmed by something or other in their life, often what they will resort to, or they'll be mightily tempted to resort to, is just a complete cutting off, like, I'm going to drop my music major, or I'm going to drop voice lessons, or I'm going to, you know, whatever. I mean, like, that seems like the best solution because it's a quick and sweeping solution. And often that's actually not the best solution, at least in the long term. And this feels so much like the same thing, that when somebody feels like they are just a bit kind of at the end of their rope, feeling so frustrated, feeling maybe overwhelmed, that the path of just plain old estrangement is the quick fix that they are so desperate for.
Right. And I think that's kind of a natural reaction to just back away, retreat. And in some cases, in terms of sibling estrangement, it's justified. So I would never want to be a proponent of absolute reconciliation. And the reason I say that is that there are some relationships that are simply too toxic and too hurtful to repair. And that's something that each person has to evaluate themselves. In my case, I didn't think my brother was that cruel or abusive. And I simply couldn't understand what was behind all this. And so I didn't feel absolutely shut down to that possibility. But I do think it's important for each person who is estranged to think about whether they want to get mixed up with this again because they could get injured again.
At one point in the book, you tell us that estrangement can be a loss as painful as death, sometimes more painful than death. I think we've even touched on that already. And you go on to say that actually when one experiences especially a really profound estrangement, that one typically goes through the same stages of loss that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross so famously wrote about. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. Mm-hmm. And was that your story as well?
I think that when there's estrangement, you have to grieve the relationship. And I was at the point after 40 years of no communication of accepting it, even though it wasn't my choice, and simply abandoning any hope. And when all of this happened, I was very suspicious and very reluctant to get mixed up with him again. I couldn't see a path with him, especially after all of those years. And I had grieved the relationship for many months and years, and I had accepted it. But yes, to answer your question, yes. I think one has to grieve the relationship when it no longer exists. And if you don't grieve it, you ruminate. So it's kind of like pick your poison here. And that's why I was ruminating. Mm. Now, the other thing I want to say to you is, and I raise this in the book, there are ways to negotiate a relationship that aren't a full engaged relationship, but are limited. And that might be a good option for those who don't want to get too hurt, but they do want to sustain some family connection. And of course, we haven't even discussed this. When there's an estrangement, it ripples throughout the entire family. So a limited relationship might actually contain the damage.
Mm. And that's one of the things you tell us about why you wanted to study this. Is not only to explore more of the details of the nature of the estrangement between you and your brother, but also you write, I wanted to learn how sibling estrangement affects an individual's relationships with other family members and friends. I mean, there are ramifications beyond the two people who are estranged from each other.
And self-esteem, the relationship you have with yourself. And that's the piece that I felt was so important, because being estranged from my brother for decades really forced me to reflect on who I was, why he wanted nothing to do with me, was there something wrong with me? And one of the things that came out in the survey is exactly that. One line that was repeated in the survey was, if my brother doesn't want anything to do with me, why would anybody else? You know, if I can't establish a connection with my own family member, maybe I'm not worthy of a connection with any other.
Wow. That really speaks at the heart of how painful this is.
Absolutely. And I kind of hijacked that, and you had asked about rippling through the family. And of course, my 86-year-old mother at the time left the voice message. She had been in pain over this estrangement, and there were only three of us left in the family. My father had passed many years ago, and they had divorced anyway. But she had been in pain over this estrangement for decades. And every time she would get invited to my brother's house, and I wouldn't get invited, she would be pulled in two different directions. And as she says in the book, I knew I had to hurt somebody. And the person she usually hurt was the one she could trust most, and that was me. Mm. He knew that I would not abandon her, and so she went to him. And, you know, I feel for her. I've thought a lot about this. I have three children. What would I do if they couldn't get along? It's a very difficult negotiation, and there's a lot of bitterness. And not only that, I mean, the thing we didn't talk about yet and why this hurts so much is I only have one brother, which meant that I was the aunt, although not functioning as one, to two nephews. My children then had no cousins on my side. So this is how this thing takes over. Now, I have to tell you, Greg, one of the wonderful things that's happened as a result of the book is my nephews have gotten in touch recently, and we've had some limited connection since the reconciliation. But they have, one has written me and said, I understand now. I understand my father. I see what happened. I feel for you. I'm so glad I don't have this with my own brother. And of course, I'm relieved to hear that as well. But it has helped them to see why their father and their aunt didn't talk for so many years.
And circling back to your mother for just a moment and the fact that she was caught in the middle, and of course that's a scenario that I'm sure plays out quite often. At one point in the book you say, I hope I never face my mother's choiceless choice. That is, she found herself often in this situation where, in a sense, there was no choice or no real choice in terms of how to go on.
You know, and that's an interesting thing too, Greg. One of the things that bothers me, as you know, my mother was a Holocaust refugee. She lost all her relatives. She didn't have family. And here my brother and I were, after being deprived of aunts and uncles and relatives on my mother's side, suddenly we had reenacted this familylessness. And it was creepy. And it made me so sad that we had access to this relationship and we didn't take advantage of it. Hmm.
You call it at one point the bitter irony of your estrangement. The fact that, in a sense, your mother would have given anything to have the relationship that you and your brother were meant to have, but were not having because of this estrangement. Well, suffice to say, and we've already touched on it, the two of you ultimately do reconcile. And your book methodically takes us through, first of all, the estrangement, and then the portion of the book called reconnection, and finally reconciliation, and kind of helps us understand how all of that can be possible, if in some cases probably sadly out of reach, just depending on who the people are or the nature of the estrangement. I couldn't help but notice that much of the book, the memoir portion, is written in present tense. I wonder if you have any idea of anything that was behind that choice.
So this will give you some insight into the reconciliation as well. When I started all this, I did not know I was going to write a book about it. I was so stunned that I was actually communicating with my brother that I decided to keep a journal and take notes. I didn't realize that journal would become the basis for the book and the memoir portion of the story. So the reason it's in first person is I was able to go back to that journal and just draw these experiences from it. Now, how did I actually end up writing about it? Well, I had a lunch with my agent in New York. And as you know, the story is quite remarkable in many ways. The reconciliation is one piece of it. But then, as you know, there is, I do a volunteer job at that time in my life. I was cuddling babies between adoption and placement, which is its own story of estrangement and detachment. And I form a friendship with a woman there who becomes a confidant. And ultimately, she plays a very large role in what happens between my brother and me. And I don't want to blow the story, right. But it's a bit of a fairy tale.
Yeah.
And so the reconciliation was remarkable, but her contribution is quite fascinating and amazing as well.
It's an incredible story, and I'm so glad that you share not only so richly the specifics of your own relationship with your own brother, but also share it in such a way that anybody can relate, draw distinctions between themselves and your experience, and even for those of us, thankfully, never estranged from our siblings, have a lot to learn as well. It's a beautiful book. again titled Brothers, Sisters, Strangers, Sibling Estrangement, and The Road to Reconciliation, published by Viking and the author Fern Schumer Chapman.
And the afterword by Scott Schumer.
Yes, by your brother. It took some persuading to get him to do that, but I'm glad that we have a direct word from him. And I'm sure you're very thankful that he allowed you to write this book and tell this story with his blessing. Fern Schumer Chapman, I'm so grateful to you for giving the world this book and for talking about it today on The Morning Show. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's always great to be with you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Gabe Henry, the author of a fascinating book called Enough is Enough, Our Failed Attempts at Making the English Language Easier to Spell. This is a look back at some of the attempts that have been made through the course of our history to make the English language a bit more rule-following or law-abiding, if you will, and a bit easier to spell. And famous Americans like Ben Franklin and Mark Twain and former President Theodore Roosevelt have all been part of various attempts to make this happen. All, of course, for naught. It's a fascinating story and a fascinating book. On Wednesday, we look forward to having in our studios Tim Mahone on the 25th anniversary of the creation of the foundation in honor of his two parents. On Thursday, an all-musical program, which will include a conversation about the musical Hairspray, currently being done at the Rohde Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha. We'll also preview the upcoming concert of the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra this Saturday evening with conductor Bob Hasty and guest cellist Alexander Hirsch. And on Friday, a conversation with the author of a book about the lasting impact and influence of the Roman Empire. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Our weather forecast calls for skies to eventually become partly sunny today. And we'll have seasonal temperatures with a high temperature right around 56 degrees. Tonight we have partly cloudy skies with an overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow, Tuesday, mostly sunny, high of 66 degrees. Sunny conditions expected to continue actually all the rest of the week, all the way through the weekend. This is WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.